Everywhere we look on the internet, it seems like other teachers are being more creative than we are. Whether it's in our social media feeds, a quick Google search that reveals something fun and interactive, activity-wise with video, or lesson plans that sound oh so more engaging than your own. When you have comparisonitis, when you live in the gap instead of the gain, always looking at what you haven't achieved compared to what you have achieved, it truly can feel as if you weren't born with the creative gene that comes with so many teachers. But I'm here to tell you today that everyone can create. Thanks for joining me today. We're going to talk about creativity as a science teacher. You're looking to change things up in your classroom. You'd like to see more student participation and interest, or you really need a better way to tap into each student's individual abilities. Maybe you're happy with everything in your classroom and you're just that teacher who will stop at nothing to provide the very best opportunities for your students so you're always open to hear more good news. Well, let me personally welcome you to the Student-Centered Science Teacher Podcast. I'm your host, Lisa Carosis. I'm a secondary science teacher with 11 years experience teaching at-risk students in a distance learning cyber model. And yet, I've realized success in my efforts to plan for and execute student-centered learning. See, I believe that a science teacher's job goes beyond transferring specific content knowledge. Rather, I believe our duty is to prepare students for life beyond our walls, to help develop them into informed, active members of society who can confidently make all kinds of decisions. So on this podcast, our discussions will focus on strategies to promote active learning in the classroom and their outcomes, as well as creating and nurturing a culture that enables students to take ownership of their learning by planning next steps and implementing our feedback. Here, we believe that our classrooms are learning laboratories, not just for students, but also for teachers. You'll always get encouragement to keep on experimenting, because what you do and how you do it matters. Let's jump into today's topic. Okay, truly, the thank you is huge today because it has been so long since I have posted a new episode. I started this in I don't know what year, but it was the fall, and I was super excited. Podcasting is something I love to do because it allows me to create a message that is free-flowing thought, has some structure, but really is served to inspire and motivate. Also inform, but mostly inspire and motivate. And I've heard from so many people that it does. Unfortunately, remember, Lisa's over here teaching full-time, and I've got a family. It can become so overwhelming to include in my daily workflow, and I haven't done that successfully. It's has become a more of a seasonal podcast, like once a year I can publish 10 episodes, and I really want to stay on a more regular schedule. So I'm starting the episode just letting you know that my current intention is to make this more manageable, and maybe it will increase the demand also. I don't know. I'm going to go with a monthly format. It takes me a really long time to produce these messages. And it takes me next to no time to record them, publish them, but to prepare them is intensive. And it's just too much for me to do on more than a monthly basis. Also, it encourages me to create a theme and just stick with the theme. And that allows me to create materials for my paid programs in alignment with that theme. I've got an email newsletter now that if you're not on it, please jump over to labineverylesson.com, scroll all the way down to the bottom, get on the Inquiry Insider newsletter list. These messages will basically be incorporated there as well. So here's to hopefully what will be the next 12 months of once a month podcast that you can look forward to. As I let you know in the introduction, we're talking about creativity today. It seems like everywhere we look on the internet, it seems like other teachers are being more creative than we are. Creativity abounding out there, whether it's in your social media feed, or you do a quick Google search for something simple and it reveals something way cooler than what you think you do. Things that are fun and interactive, or even just written lesson plans that when you read them, sound oh so more engaging than your own. When we have comparisonitis, when we live in the gap instead of the gain, it's a concept I'm totally all in for lately. This idea that we are constantly comparing what we are versus what we want to be or do, instead of looking back at how far we've come and what we actually achieve. When we have these mindsets, it really can feel as if we weren't born with the creative gene. I have my own struggle that I'm going to tell you with, a little story. And that's probably where the topic, the theme for this month comes from, my own experience. So I don't assume everyone's got this problem, but I assume many people do. And so I'm here to tell you today, everyone can create. And we're going to start there. So if you're listening and you believe you aren't creative, that's no different than one of your students telling you they aren't a science and math person. And let's be real, how much does that make your skin crawl? Because it bothers me a whole heck of a lot. We know there's no such thing. You can be what you want to be. You just might have to go at it a little differently. Creativity is nothing more than the creation of an idea or an object that is both novel and useful. It's nothing more than a new idea that has value in solving a problem, or it's an actual tangible thing that you can use. As teachers, we create lesson plans for learning. We create worksheets for practice. We create expectations reinforced by systems and routines to promote and reward student behavior. We create a physically warm and inviting environment in our classroom with content or task-specific reminders, presentations of student work, and even unique themes to celebrate the seasons. Or as a science teacher, you probably display some sort of discipline-specific physical environment. So if you teach chemistry like me, you might have glassware around and maybe some molecular model kits. Maybe your wet lab space is actually part of your teaching classroom. If you're a biology teacher, chances are you have microscopes and petri dishes and some living things in your room, like plants or maybe even a fish tank. You created those environments. Even if you inherited them, you've probably added to them, made them your own. Beyond the tangible things teachers produce, they also create relationships. These relationships are uniquely you. They're an extension of your personality. When I think back to my teachers that I had in school, some of them would be thought of as strict, but my relationship with them was one that propelled me forward. It was one that always challenged me to reach higher or demand more of myself. I've had teachers who created relationships through humor, always cracking jokes or just generally keeping conversations and interactions lighthearted. And then there were teachers I'd have just that I'd call fun, the ones who were exuberant in their delivery, no matter if they were reading an article out of a newspaper or reenacting a scene from Shakespeare. As teacher, you also create the atmosphere in which your students learn and grow. How about this? Your very role creates opportunities for failure. I don't mean the kind of ultimate failure, like we don't want ultimate failure, but let's call them micro failures. I firmly believe most of all human learning is done through experience and reflection. So when you show up every day and you provide anything with which your students will make a mistake and not be perfect right out of the gate, you've created an opportunity for failure. And that failure should be the catalyst for reflection and growth. That's how it's supposed to work anyway. Now, if you're still listening to me, you might be feeling a little let down, a little deceived. You thought you'd tune into this message that told you how to be more creative, like harness real creativity, the kind that artists and musicians make, the kind that maybe those teachers who you see on the internet and you might be comparing yourself to, maybe that kind of creativity. Share a little of that. Just stay to the end. But you need to know about me, if you don't already, that I'm in this venture. I am talking to you on a podcast right now because my heart is with you. I am on a mission to support teachers because sometimes I feel so unsupported. And sometimes support is not more instruction. It's not teaching something new. It's not telling you to do something more. I mean, frankly, if I told you to do something even more, you'd probably want to just turn me off. Teacher support to me means reminding you of the power you have and the potential you have within yourself. Reminding you of the opportunities that present themselves if you let go of fear, which sounds so deep and maybe weird, but it's the thing that holds everyone back from everything. Reminding you that if you can tap into the spirit that caused you to choose this profession in the first place, you could be the light. Be the change you want for your students. In an article published by Teach Blast, the authors wrote, "All too often, people outgrow imagination as adulthood approaches due to an encroaching sense of self-doubt." In my past messages, I haven't brought you a lot of references, like hard and true educational resource stuff, but I did it today. And I'm so happy about having done it because I feel like it's a little validating. I've gone through my experiences. I know what I know because I've lived it, but here it is in black and white for you. Fear is a thing. And therein lies the truth about your creativity and being more creative. Creativity means taking risks and not being afraid to make mistakes. This, of course, is true for both parties in education, teachers and students alike. I'm not an administrator, so I can't speak to that, but I'm sure they have their own risk-taking, benefit-making situation there too. How likely is it for our students to overcome those feelings of being just not artsy or just not sciencey if we perpetuate that notion in our own conversations with them or even in our presentation to them in our daily work? So now we'll get into how you can be more creative and we can get that trickle-down effect that you're looking for. Let's go with step one. Believe you already are creative. And yes, I've delivered this a little bit backwards. I created the hype and reminded you of all that you already do. Because if we don't tackle the opposition in our minds, we're doomed to continue business as usual. All you need to do is tell yourself, on the regular, I'm creative. And this was one of the simple battles I had going on in my mind years ago before I found my breakthroughs with student-centered strategies and inquiry-based active learning. I don't mean to oversimplify this or reveal to the world that I talk to myself. By the way, if you talk to yourself too positively, of course, we call that an affirmation. It's nothing more than a positive message you repeat to yourself over and over again. And affirmations are most effective in the moments when your thoughts are telling you the opposite, the negative side of whatever story is going on. It's really about catching yourself red-handed. And this is what I did without knowing it was a thing so many years ago. You know what? I'd say, I am creative. I make lessons every day. And at the time, it was like my favorite thing to do. It kind of still is, but my hands are in so many different buckets that I have a lot of favorites. So step one, just believe you're creative. You gotta know that because you can't do anything else after that if you don't. Next would be focus your creative efforts on experiences. If you're trying to be creative and you're going after doing that by creating materials you want to make for your students to use, things like escape rooms, gamifying lessons, even some specific type of collaborative group work, I would suggest that you're putting the cart before the horse. You are making the problem too big to tackle. I'm really basically talking about backwards planning. Knowing what you need students to know or do with the content and thinking first about how you'll get them to that place of mastery. I'm suggesting focusing on the creation of process rather than product. For me, the product has emerged from the process, and I think it does for most creators. In science, it's actually even easier. The process always really needs to be rooted in observation. Even if you teach a more engineering-based course, or your standards have some element of engineering connected to them, observation still lives at the heart of improving upon or adding a twist to what already exists to build a new solution. So then it's just about sourcing the object or scenario or resource that you want your students to observe. In focusing on the creation of an experience for your students, you're also doing double duty because the process students will go through after they observe will be to create questions, to create patterns, the identification of patterns, to create ideas about those cross-cutting concepts of science like cause and effect, systems and their models, scale and proportion, and so on. In focusing on the creation of an experience that will immerse your students in a process, it'll be like pouring cheese sauce over peas for a toddler to eat. They won't be so focused on the demand to eat their peas because the yummy cheese will distract them. It works the same way. Your students will be so caught up in the process, the experience you've created for them to learn in, that they won't feel so much pressure, maybe even fear, about coming up with a quote creative solution or conclusion, or being perfectly correct about what they offer or infer. It'll all just become part of the process. Now, this is where I love that I've done some research for you because I don't really want you to just take my word for it. That's a lie, I really do. My transformation has been so profound for me. I just want it for everyone. And I guess I feel like that should be enough, but I'm so happy to have found it in black and white elsewhere. I have provided the article references as links in the show notes wherever you're reading this, so you can access them and read them for yourself if you'd like to too, because I've done some digging to support my perspective. In the same TeachBlast article I referenced earlier, the authors described several benefits to students engaging in creative endeavors. They include reduction of stress and anxiety, which is a huge thing now for our students, our kiddos. A sense of purpose, feelings of accomplishment and pride, improvement of focus, and an increased willingness to take risks themselves. In yet another article, which I don't have handy right now, I totally forgot to write down the reference for that one, but it's there down there for you. They write, quote, "Decades of research link creativity with the intrinsic motivation to learn. When students are focused on a creative goal, they become more absorbed in their learning and more driven to acquire the skills they need to accomplish it." End quote. That article even supports what I was sharing earlier about what I called micro failures. They call it, quote, "productive struggle." My principal refers to the work I do as comfortable struggle. No matter what we call it, the authors of that work say that these experiences we create are, quote, fertile soil for emotional growth because they, quote, build resilience in students to push through difficulty to reach success. That article goes on to cite autonomy and control over the task, as well as a feeling of competency from the endeavors as benefits to students learning in some sort of creative way. And it doesn't have to be art class. Mic drop moment. Not have to be art class. If you've read or listened or watched any content I've produced anywhere on the web, or if you're on my email list or in my programs, you heard those terms before: autonomy, control, choice, competency. These terms describe the culture of a student-centered classroom. And it turns out it's not just great for the students. This, folks, has really become my life. I truly spend my days helping students get all the good vibes from the experiences I provide them. But it's so important for me to put the word out about how it's completely changed how I work and how I feel about my work, because I know it can do the same for you. There's an article published in eSchool News, and again, provided that link in the show notes for you. The authors discuss the results of a survey administered by a market research company called Advantis on behalf of a group within the Adobe company, you know, like Adobe Acrobat, Reader, Creative Cloud, the Adobe for Education team. This survey attempted to deep dive into educator experience with regard to, quote, stress and burnout levels, the key causes, and what personal or curricular activities most improved their own well-being. And the results weren't surprising to me because I was living there. 66% of educators in the study, which they didn't define at any particular grade level or content area, they cited feelings of total exhaustion, citing classroom management, low engagement, and student mental health as top concerns worsening their own well-being. Because Adobe is a company focused squarely on creativity, on creating things using their technology, they specifically surveyed the impact of integrating creative aspects into instruction. Of the 1,000 educators and school leaders that were surveyed, 81% indicated that student engagement was higher when students were presented with creative opportunities. If you could see me right now, I'm raising my hand. That's me. Me. 82% claimed that those positive impacts on students increased their own feelings of satisfaction and reduced burnout, noting that they felt reconnected to their mission, the whole reason they chose to become educators in the first place. One participant in the study said, open quote, "Using creative activities in the classroom makes you feel like your career is worth it. You feel relieved. It's like a breath of fresh air." Another participant said, quote, "I see happiness in my students and I know they're learning and having fun. I feel like my job is complete." Does that sound like it's possible for you? Don't shut me off yet, because those are not necessarily art teachers. This is where I have to remind you again that as a science teacher, creativity can come from the experience you prepare for your students to encounter. I was not really in that study, but I group myself into those people who say their students had great outcomes and they felt great because of their great student outcomes. It's a real thing. I teach chemistry online to at-risk students. I am living the life right now because it's transformed my whole thing so much. You don't need a degree in graphic design to make a creative worksheet. And how about I just call this one out too? No offense to you if you're listening and you make coloring books or coloring pages, you know, with pictures of cells and organelles and I don't even know, all the sciencey stuff relevant to your content area. This is not that kind of creativity I'm talking about. Those are time-filling, time-wasting exercises, in my opinion. But you don't need to be a dollar store diva either, you know, collecting all the household items to make models of things, being hands-on. You just need to know and understand the scientific method, scientific and engineering process, whatever you want to call it. I had like a whole series of comments to a post I made on social media one time about how I shouldn't call it the scientific method. So whatever you love there, I'm just talking about the process, observing, questioning, analyzing, inferring, evidence, all the things. And identify a resource for students to work with to execute that process. And guess what? Lest you believe every true science exploration must be hands-on, those acclaimed education researchers agree with me about technology. In yet another article that I don't have the name of handy, sorry for that, it'll be linked in the show notes. It says, when teachers combine creativity with transformative technology use, they see even better outcomes. Better, that is, with regard to problem solving, building critical thinking skills, and making connections between subjects. Everything we want and need and seek to achieve in our classrooms. That's it. We can go home happy when that happens. And that brings me to my final suggestion in this episode, and maybe the reason you clicked in to listen to begin with. Step three, I think we're on step three. Rethink how to achieve creativity, because it's not as difficult as you might think. And now is when I can tell my personal story. When I was in graduate school, pursuing an advanced degree in chemistry, one of the criteria that needed to be met for PhD candidacy was the preparation and submission of four unique research ideas, complete with an overview of how they would be explored, tools you'd use, and outcomes you might expect to see, as well as a justified purpose for pursuing them. I mean, these four research ideas weren't submitted all at once. One was due each quarter within an academic year. And there was another twist. They all needed to incorporate the research work of one of the visiting professors who'd delivered a seminar to our department. Honestly, thinking back and retelling this story now, maybe this is where I first started to believe I wasn't creative. I probably also thought I was dumb as a bag of rocks because I totally freaked out. I can actually recall regularly saying out loud, I can't do that. I am not smart enough. I am not creative enough. And I felt like I could sort of talk my way through the not being smart part, but to create a whole new research study? What? But there existed a process that I didn't know about. And that's when I learned it. I learned it there from this requirement. Folks, creativity is often just about mashing up two separate already existing ideas. It's not copyright infringement. It's not intellectual property because it's totally something new. I give you a fun example first and then we'll get serious. Okay. Super fun example. My family loves Shark Week. Shark Week. Yeah, we love Shark Week too, but Shark Tank. The other night we were watching a rerun and a guy was proposing that his business was about overalls made of sweatpants. Okay. Mashup. People love overalls. People love sweatpants. Me personally, I did not love that product, but what? He made a whole business out of it. I don't think he got an investor either. But still, he was creative. No matter where you put him on the scale of creativity, you know, he may not have been the creativity of Mozart or Beethoven or the guy who painted the Mona Lisa, right? But he made sweatpant overalls. Shifting out of pop culture and fashion into science. There's another article I'm going to give you in the show notes that I don't know the name of, and I don't know who wrote it, but it's in Science News. And it provides an excellent reference, a nice little story of the work of a scientist whose last name is Hirschbaugh. I think that's how you pronounce it, who won the Nobel Prize in Chemistry in 1986 for his work. Now, it just actually so happens that it's chemistry. I wasn't looking for this. In fact, this article is all about creativity in science and teaching and creativity in classrooms. So it's squarely focused on our conversation here. Hirschbaugh learned of a technique in physics called molecular beams. And this technique allowed researchers to study the motion of molecules in a vacuum. And he'd never used it himself, but just, like things happen with science, you wondered what would happen if he crossed the molecular beams of different molecules. So he said, I might be able to use this in my own work. He'd hoped he could learn more about how quickly reactions occurred from collisions under those conditions. So here's the mashup, everybody. He did chemistry, reactions, molecules, and he used molecular beams to do it. If I had a visual to give you, though this is a podcast, I would just say A plus B makes C. And you don't have to make all the things. Funny, my younger son this morning gave me a paper on his way out to school, and his technology teacher's putting together a recipe book. And the students have to bring in three recipes. And, we talked about what are your favorite things. And he was like, sausage, but it's pre-made at the store. And I said, that's okay. We make sausage with peppers and onions in a red sauce. And he was like, yeah, but you have to buy the sausage at the store. I said, it's okay. It's okay. We put them together. We make something new. That's exactly what we're talking about here. Hirschbaum took something that existed in physics, it was well known, and he applied it to a different situation in a different field. Doing so, he created a new experience he could report on and new knowledge to share with the world. So his journal articles, I'm sure, were all about what he did, the experience, and the knowledge he gained. What's even better about that story is that in this article, he said, quote, "It seemed so simple and obvious. I don't think it took a lot of insight as much as naivete." Sometimes we're so deeply connected to what we know and the problems we have that we don't see the obvious opportunities that might exist if we just step back. What do they say? Keep it simple, stupid. And there's even more. I mean, this article is just, it was begging to be part of this podcast. Hirschbaum reported some cynicism about his idea. He claimed that people thought, quote, it would not be feasible. He said, quote, it was called the lunatic fringe of chemistry, which I just loved. That end quote. He said that. It was not accepted. Crazy talk. And he loved it. And right there, he's maybe just verified that idea that being a creative only requires a bit of bravery. And so we are at the end, folks. Now I challenge you. Make something new. Create. Make a new experience that forms the foundation for a science lesson. Or make a new resource for students to use alongside a science lesson. Make a new system to streamline your workflow. All you have to do is define your need, your desire, the outcome you want, research what's already been done, and mash them up. Add technology that will up the ante and pack a real punch to whatever goal it is you're trying to achieve. You want to know what? I'm out here to make all this easier for you, so I think I've made it even easier for you. Every month, I try to add a new tool or training to the Active Learning Laboratory. And this month, it's a workbook I'm calling Innovate to Inspire. Over 15 to 19 pages, I've outlined a process for you to create something, anything in your job. You wear several hats. There are many categories for which you could create a solution, a resource, an experience, a tool in this way that I've described today, the way Hirschbaum did, the way all scientists, engineers, and inventors do, the way I have and continue to do. I outlined the exact process I've used to create my lesson planning template, my coordinating digital notes, and more recently, my digital planner, my student-centered science sticker system, both of those latter two things available as tools in the Active Learning Laboratory. And of course, when you're a member in the Active Learning Laboratory, you also have access to a series of 15 video trainings that are part of what I call the foundational flight plan to go from planet lecture to planet practice, specifically designed to help you create interactive science activities for your lessons. So they could apply to this workbook as well, but in the Active Learning Lab, you have an even more defined stepwise process for that particular challenge. A lot of specific direction and examples to make it fun for you, and so that you feel like you're not doing it alone, so that you're doing it alongside me. Of course, there's also a pretty intensive mindset focus bonus included with the Active Learning Lab if you aren't quite feeling brave enough to be the creative science teacher you want to be. As a reminder, the Active Learning Lab is a $7 per month membership that you can cancel anytime. It's a low cost, low risk investment that has the potential to transform your teaching practice into a student-centered hub of discovery. But if you're not ready for that and you just want to learn more about what it might take from a pedagogical perspective to increase student creativity in your classroom, you might enjoy my ebook entitled Unlock the Power of Constructivism. In it, I detail some of the most popular approaches and strategies to engage and empower our students through building new knowledge. You can get that for free at, there's no www, okay? X the www. It's just getactive.labineverylesson.com/constructivism. CONSTRUCTIVISM. And you could get that on the freebie area of my website, Lab in Every Lesson, also. Until then, everyone, I hope you enjoyed this. I hope it was helpful. I hope you're looking forward to next month for us to reconnect again. Send any questions you might have via email or in our free group. You could get both of those resources from my website, labineverylesson.com. And keep on trying to emphasize meaning over memorization and cooperation over compliance in your science classroom. And you'll see success.